Kia ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson.
As members of this House, we are all stained by the actions of other members.
Labour MP Portal Williams reflecting on the week where both major parties were hit with yet more scandals, resignations and sackings. In the last month, several MPs have quit Parliament in dramatic circumstances, many of them for behaviour resulting in an abrupt end to their political careers.
Good morning, everybody. I'm absolutely appalled by what I have been hearing this morning and finding out from members of the public. Andrew Falloon has now resigned as a Member of Parliament.
This is not the way National's Judith Collins would have wanted to start her new leadership. Two statements issued on Monday mark the start of an ignominious end to the career of backbench National MP Andrew Falloon. The first statement was from him announcing he would stand down at the election. He talked about his struggle after the suicide of close friends, alluded to mistakes he'd made and apologised, but no detail about what he had done. Shortly after, a statement from Judith Collins saying she had dealt with an issue relating to the MP and that he was suffering from significant mental health issues and his privacy and that of his family must be respected. Mr. Falloon had sent an indecent picture of a female to a 19-year-old woman he knew. That news prompted more women to come forward.
To advise me that they have also received similar communications, unwelcomed and uncalled for communications from Andrew Falloon.
By the end of the week, the police had reopened an initial investigation they'd done because of the new complainants who'd come forward. Andrew Falloon was gone and the focus was on both Judith Collins and the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, whose office received the initial complaint about 3 days before Ms. Collins was informed.
We've acted with absolute integrity on this matter, received the correspondence, sought permission from the complainant and then passed it rightly on to the people who could deal with it, and that was the National Party.
Judith Collins was told on Saturday, but it wasn't until Monday morning that she'd meet with her MP, releasing her statement a few hours later. She defended that time frame.
I had to confront Andrew Falloon face to face. This is not a matter to be dealt with by email or phone calls.
And referencing his mental health in her statement.
It was appropriate because we were very concerned with his level of safety and mental health. And I know that some people might say this is, you know, you could hide behind this. I take mental health very seriously. If someone's sitting in my office and telling me they have a serious mental health condition for which they have been receiving treatment, I will take it seriously.
Heading into their weekly caucus meeting, National MPs were shocked by what had happened.
Oh, I'm disgusted. I mean, I've got a daughter who's a similar age to the young lady who came forward.
What happened and what I saw since yesterday was totally inappropriate.
I have real concerns for the young lady, but equally I have real concerns for Andrew's mental health.
A pervading sense of disappointment from voters in Mr. Falloon's Rangitata electorate, speaking to RNZ's Colin Young.
Does it make you less likely to vote for National at this election?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And I never thought I'm a farmer and, you know, it's sort of traditionally.
Yeah. So you would normally... Andrew Falloon would normally have had your vote.
Yes, yeah. But, yeah, hard to know who to vote for now.
It's very, very sad. Sad for the community as well, obviously. Yeah. A bit of a loss of it. Local MP is always a shame as well.
What was your sort of first reaction when you heard that he'd been doing this?
I don't really have an opinion on that, but it was just, yeah, it was a bit of a shock and a bit sad for the local community.
But there would be more to come.
Have you received anything on about Labour ministers or Labour MPs?
I have actually, and I have advised the Prime Minister, and I've asked for anybody who has that information to send it directly to her.
When did this happen?
Actually, just yesterday. But I've passed it on, and I'm not going to be indulging in any attacks on Labour on these things.
So you've
because
passed a file or passed a tip-off to the
it's
PM.
It's a tip-off to the Prime Minister.
About a Labour Party minister?
Yes, that's right.
About certain behaviours?
Well, it doesn't say all the details of it, but I've simply passed it on. I spoke to the Prime Minister yesterday as we were coming out of question time. I asked to speak to her and I'd said I'd received such a tip-off, and I did not want to receive any information on it. I would be asking the person to send it directly to her.
Coincidentally, Ms. Collins had received the email that immediately swung the attention away from her party to Labour.
This morning I am announcing that I have dismissed Minister Ian Lees-Galloway as a minister.
After receiving the information, Jacinda Ardern put the allegations to him, at which time he admitted to having a consensual relationship with a former staffer.
Over the course of the conversation with the minister, it became clear to me that his position as a minister was untenable.
In the end, she decided he'd shown a complete lack of judgment.
In undertaking this relationship, he has opened himself up to accusations of improperly using his office. He has not modelled the behaviour I expect as a minister that is in charge of setting a standard and culture as Minister for Workplace Relations and Safety.
Ms Ardern was asked what she made of the way Ms Collins had handled the information about a Labour minister after it came her way.
Once I received information, I passed it directly on to the Leader of the Opposition and I discussed it no more widely than that.
What do you mean, so you're saying that the appearance on the AIM show this morning, is that what you were referring to?
Look, I've just simply set out the differences. I received information, I passed it on to the Leader of the Opposition. The Leader of the Opposition has received information and obviously has chosen to deal with that differently. That is her judgment. I made mine, she's made hers.
Judith Collins denies any ulterior motive for revealing the allegation about the minister during her media rounds, saying she gave a straight answer to a straight question.
I didn't name Mr. Ian Lees-Galloway, and Duncan Garner asked me a question, straight question, I gave him a straight answer.
Are you playing politics with this information?
No, not at all. In fact, what I've done is I alerted the Prime Minister to the information an hour after I received it. I refused to receive any detail from the informant, and I asked the informant to send it directly to the Prime Minister's chief of staff.
You could have stayed mum until the Prime Minister had had an opportunity to deal with the situation, and you didn't. You politicised it.
That is complete rubbish.
This has all happened against the background of intense scrutiny of the behaviour of not only MPs but also staff in recent years. The 2019 Debbie Francis report delivered a scathing view of what it's like to work at Parliament, including allegations of sexual assault. One of the recommendations was a code of conduct. The senior National MP Anne Tolley led the development of that code, and the Speaker Trevor Mallard wants all parties to now sign up to it. A long-serving member himself, I asked Mr. Mallard why MPs in Parliament continued to make the headlines for all the wrong reasons.
Parliament has more of a power imbalance than the vast majority of workplaces. There is a lot of scrutiny, and so things are more likely to come out within Parliament. But I think it is a bit behind what is generally acceptable in most workplaces. And people who have worked inside and outside of Parliament have been very clear with me that some of the behaviours here will just not be accepted in workplaces these days.
There's been discussion this week about the type of people Parliament might attract, or is it the type of people that come here, or is it the environment that can result in this behaviour? You've been an MP for a long time. What's your, assessment of that combination of all of those different dynamics?
Well, there's no doubt that parliamentarians have bigger egos than the population at large. You know, it's part of the drive for some people to get into the place. But I also think that we are generally not as well supported as we should be. People have a vastly different skill sets. All MPs become managers. Many haven't had experience at doing that. Some people have been in, you know, really adversarial roles and know how to do that properly and with respect, and others haven't. And I mean, I'm probably a good example of myself. It took me a long time, many years, to understand how it was appropriate to treat people in the chamber, for example.
What are the consequences if the code of conduct is breached?
At the moment, There is a discussion going on about whether there should be an independent commissioner or not. There's not an agreement for that to happen, and we would need an agreement across the parliament for that to work properly. At the moment, there are enforcement mechanisms through WIPs. I have some powers, which I have exercised with the Chief Executive of the Parliamentary Service, for example, to not allow some members to have staff members until the members have received training in how to manage people and how to work with people, because we've had, in those cases, breakdowns in relationships which clearly the members have been responsible for. And I must say that the vast majority of people who have had that sort of intervention have, you know, got coaching, got mentoring, and have vastly improved their behaviour. And I think that is something which is really good. And sort of 90% of the people who work in these buildings are really good people, and we don't have any problems with. It's just, you know, there's clearly people work in a very open and transparent environment, and some of them become, the issues become very clear. There are some people, though, who a lot of work has gone into, not necessarily with their own staff, but with how they treat people around the building, people who are regularly abusive of officials at Select Committee or officials generally. There are people who don't treat reception and other staff with the respect that they deserve. We have people who are notorious for losing their diaries and their tempers at the same time when they end up in the wrong place. And I'm determined that, you know, that we'll work with the WIPs and we'll give people a warning, but if behaviour is very seriously bad or repeated, then there's going to be transparency around that. I feel that I am almost involved in covering up bad behaviour when I'm involved in repeated complaints about the same MPs.
What position does that put you in as Speaker, and what can you do to change that? Because that was a big part of the Debbie Francis report, the fact that this confidentiality that MPs are afforded through the way parliamentary service is set up has been a cover for a huge amount of bad behaviour that normally would have been publicised or dealt with in a different way in another workplace.
As far as people who work to members of parliament are concerned, there's been a recent law change around tripartite employment arrangements, which mean that members will have to sign up when someone's appointed. They will at that point sign into the code of conduct, and they will be personally liable in the employment court if there is a breakdown for which they are responsible. Now, previously, it's all been on the parliamentary service. Going forward, the members can have individual liability as well. And, you know, this is being pointed out to people, that the next round of appointments that occur, you know, this is being pointed out to members. And I'm hoping both the transparency of that and the possible financial penalties that flow from it will cause members to think much more carefully about how they work with their staff, and if they think that are possible issues, that they get help. I mean, there are lots of good people around who help, you know, very senior managers in the public service and in the commercial sector become good employers and help them learn well in a team. And we're using some of those people around Parliament now. I think working with those people is a really good investment.
Your role as Speaker, if you're Speaker after the election, I'm picking up frustration at the position you've been potentially put in terms of that confidentiality. Are you going to take a harder line on repeat offenders?
I think for very serious offenders, and for people who don't learn the lesson the first time around, then I think there is an obligation to make it transparent. In the end, frankly, parties should not be reselecting people who are not good people to work with.
The political discourse of past weeks has been dominated by stories about MPs' failings, ranging from their handling of a portfolio through to extremely serious sexual misconduct. The phrase dirty politics has become synonymous with leaks, voter manipulation, and using blogs and social media to put dirt on opponents out into the public arena. Judith Collins lost her ministerial portfolios in 2014 after being accused of being involved in a smear campaign against a senior public servant. She denied any wrongdoing and was reinstated a year later. 6 years on, and voters will have little tolerance for dirty politics from National or any other party. New Zealand faces some of the most challenging economic and social circumstances in decades. Voters will be looking to political leaders for ideas and a plan to take this country forward, not petty politics. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again, head to rnz.co.nz/focusonpolitics. Mā te wā.